morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our job here is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason. His is the only reliable voice in an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. We were considering the roundtable discussion that was reported in USA Today. It was a discussion with three former NSA employees. These three men were senior, in senior positions within the NSA. They had all worked in the NSA in the range of about a decade or more. And they had all become aware, because they had been assigned to the project, of this massive data vacuum that the United States is using to suck in everything that we do as citizens, our keystrokes on the our computers, as well as our conversations on our telephones. And in addition to that, even our financial transactions through our Social Security numbers, they are monitoring everything. They have decided that the real enemy, the threat to them, is the average American. And as a result, these three men decided that, recognized that what they were being asked to do was wrong. They went to their supervisors and said, what we are doing here is criminal. This is in opposition to everything this country was founded on. It's opposed to the U.S. Constitution. We ought not be doing that. Their supervisors, most senior officers in the NSA, CIA, did nothing. In fact, they turned them over as troublemakers. They went to the head of these organizations and got the same response, where went to the court system report that the U.S. government was breaking its own constitution, and the courts, rather than hearing their case, decided instead to prosecute them. They went to congressmen, they went to senators, who couldn't care less. They also went to the media, but the media chose not to believe them. You know, the media is in lockstep with your government, and the media had no interest in what they had to say, wouldn't cover them. And so they were prosecuted by the U.S. government. Then comes Snowden, low-ranking guy, but happened to be a database administrator and therefore had access to information and still had a conscience. And he published the proof that what these men had been saying over the last 5 years or so was wholly accurate. So over the last day or two, we've been covering that report. We're going to continue with it now. This was the next question that was asked by USA Today. What did we learn from the Verizon warrant by the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court? Drake was the first to answer. Well, it's the first time we've publicly seen an actual secret surveillance court order. I don't really want to call it the Foreign Intelligence Court anymore, because it's just become a surveillance court. Well, that's profound. And according to the government, we are all foreigners now. By virtue of that order, every single phone usage record that Verizon has maintained has been turned over to the NSA. There was no probable cause. There was no indication of any kind of terrorism or counterterrorism investigation or operation. It was simply, give us the data on Americans. Makes it a wholesale violation of the Fourth Amendment. Why is the FBI requesting the data? The institution requesting the data from on that court order was the FBI. Isn't the FBI a domestic policing agency? This is supposed to be the Foreign Intelligence Court. Why didn't the Foreign Intelligence Court tell the FBI they have no standing in the matter? I mean, the Supreme Court struck down Proposition 8 on gay marriage in the state of California by saying that when it was overturned by the appellate court, that the voters in California had no standing in their own issue. It wasn't turned down on constitutional grounds, just simply they had no standing. Well, the FBI would have no standard in foreign intelligence gathering. So why were they the one requesting the data? Why then did the FBI, when did the FBI become international? And the order directs Verizon not to pass on the information to them, but to the NSA instead. Then Vinny chimed in. What this is really saying is that the NSA has become a processing service for the FBI. The implications are that everyone's privacy is now violated, and it can retroactively analyze the activity of anybody in the country back 12 years. You've had unreasonable search and seizure of everything you have done. Now, the other point that's important is about the serial number of the order, 13-80. That means it's the 80th order of the court in 2013. If you make the assumption that most all of these orders have to deal with companies and the turnover of material by those companies to the government, then there may be up to 80 companies that are involved in this transfer of information. So somewhere 80 companies, internet and telecom firms, are participating in this massive data transfer to the NSA. In other words, what we had been told about Verizon and eight firms that are participating in PRISM, Microsoft and Facebook, Apple, Skype, and the like, is just the Google, is just the tip of the iceberg. Radek was the next to speak. I consider this to be an unlawful order. While I'm glad that we finally have some tangible proof, this order came from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They have no jurisdiction to authorize domestic surveillance. But did it matter? The United States Constitution doesn't give them jurisdiction to do any of this. Didn't seem to matter, did it? Benny then said, it's documentation that cannot be refuted. Weeby, it's formal proof that our suspicions were correct. What were the suspicions? That the data collection mechanism that they were building would actually be turned on Americans and it would be indiscriminate. That's what they suspected. That's why they blew the whistle. They were right. Question. Even given the senior positions that you were all in, you never actually saw one of these court orders, did you? Drake answered first, no, they're incredibly secret. It's a very close hold. Close hold means very few people have access to them. It's a secret court with a secret appeals process. What was your reaction when you saw it? Benny said, mine was that it's documentary evidence that what we've been saying all along, so they could not deny it. Drake said, for me, it was material evidence of an institutional crime of massive proportions. Weeby, yes, it's criminal. Question, Drake, or Thomas Drake, is the object of the question. Thomas Drake, you worked as a contractor for NSA for about a decade before you went on staff there. Were you surprised that a 29-year-old contractor based in Hawaii was able to get access to this sort of information that he subsequently released? Drake said, it's just that we're in the Internet and digital age. One of the critical roles is the system administrator. Somebody has to keep it running. Benny, part of his job as the system administrator is to keep the databases working. So that meant that he could go into the network or go into any file or any system at any time, take from it, change it, add to it, do whatever he wanted. So that means he had access to go in. That's why he said, I could even target the president or a judge. He could insert them into his target list, which then he could distribute worldwide. If he wanted to be treasonous, He could have been. As he said, he could tap the president's phone. As a super user of the data system, yes, he could go in and access or change anything. Question. At a Senate hearing in March, Oregon Democrat Senator Ron Wyden asked the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, if there was a mass data collection going on of Americans. He said, no. Was that a lie? Drake, this is incredible dissembling. Now, dissembling is not a word that I use in my regular parlance, so I thought I'd share with you what the dictionary says about incredible dissembling. It is the incredible creation or adoption of a false appearance in order to conceal the facts or intentions. We're talking about the Oversight Committee unable to get a straight answer because the straight answer, if it was given, would reveal the perfidy. Now, perfidy is another term that we don't typically use in our ordinary discussions. What is perfidy? Treachery, disloyalty, deceit, duplicity, betrayal, or just plain old lying that's actually going on inside of the government. Now, for those who are still patriotic, for those who support one political party over another, let that sink in. James Clapper was involved in treachery, disloyalty, deceit, duplicity, betrayal, and lying. He adopted a false appearance in order to conceal the facts. And yet he has not been prosecuted for perjury. He has not been prosecuted for dereliction of his duty. He has not been prosecuted for engaging in a criminal act in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. He continues to do his job, which is to lie to us, which is to spy on us, and he gets paid for it. There's something incredibly inappropriate about that. And when you think about it, and if you remain patriotic, there's something very troubling about that. We'll return in a moment. Returning to this story of the insiders into the NSA who recognized that the NSA was creating an apparatus to spy on ordinary Americans, turning the citizens of this country into the perceived enemies of the government that should now be spied upon, a Gestapo kind of organization. I mean, how would it be any different than the Gestapo as internal police designed to spy on ordinary citizens? So the next question that USA Today asked is, what should Clapper have said? And Benny said he should have said, I cannot comment in open forum. Question, does Congress provide effective oversight into these programs? Remember, the president said, you know, you ought not be blaming me for these things. And by the way, you ought not be blaming Obama for them. While Obama said that he would stop them, and he lied about that. He's lied about everything, so how would this be any different? The Foreign Intelligence Court and all the means to disregard the U.S. Constitution were put in place by King George II. And if you want to blame someone for the destruction of your liberty, for the destruction of your country, both economically and morally, you should look at George W. Bush. So this is not an issue, which I know the conservative talk shows are just having a field day going after Obama on. This is, Obama's complicit, but he's not the ringleader here. This was a Republican act. It's so much like so many things that happen in this country. If you are conservative in the sense that you want less government intrusion, you want less government spending, you should be happier when a Democrat is in office because it's Republicans who typically talk the talk of less government intrusion and less government spending. But because the heart and soul and mindset of the Republican who is elected is no different than the Democrat who is elected, you actually get a better result with the Democrat. And the reason for that is that more people are watching, expecting the Democrats to infringe on rights and to spend wantonly, and so it's more difficult for them to do it. But yet with guys like George W. Bush, where the people think, his rhetoric is, I'm a compassionate conservative, that you would expect him not to increase government spending and not to curtail freedoms. And yet, what it was his track record, the worst president in history up to that point in terms of deficit spending. He turned a surplus into a $1.4 trillion annual deficit. And he's the person responsible for disgorging the U.S. Constitution so that he could spy on ordinary people. He also engaged the United States in two wars that bankrupt the country and made horrible situations worse in Afghanistan and in Iraq. In other words, when it comes to the Republican and Democratic political aspects of this country, they are two sides of the same counterfeit coin. So this was the question. Does Congress provide oversight for these programs? Congress has been a rubber stamp. The judicial branch has been shut down from hearing these lawsuits because every time a suit is brought to them, they're told that the people who are challenging these programs either have no standing or that they are covered by the state secrets privilege and the government says that they can't go forward. See, the government doesn't play by the same rules. You can only sue the government if the government approves the suit. But if somebody is blowing the whistle on malfeasance of the government simply says, A, the person has no standing because they're not being spied on. They're just reporting that the government is violating its own constitution, so they have no standing. Or they'll say that because the only way to process this case would be to reveal how we operate in secret, we're going to disallow the case. Cases, one case after another, constantly dismissed on that grounds. You know, the whole issue with David Headley, the man who, working for the U.S. government in two different departments, aided and abetted the terrorism attack by Pakistani's ISI in Mumbai, India. Every time that a judge was in the process of making a ruling on him, sentencing him, incarcerating him for his drug-related charges or from hearing his terrorism-related charges, it was always dismissed. The government overruled the judge, told the judge, you have no standing here. You can't rule on this case. The government has decided this, that, and the other thing. And that's what happens in a society where we assume that the judicial process, the congressional oversight process, is working. But it isn't at all. It's nothing but a rubber stamp. More about this when we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. One of the things that we're talking about here, specifically as it relates to the United States spying on its own citizens, turning its own citizens into the enemy that they think is threatening the government's control, is that the recognition that from an insider that Congress is being used as a rubber stamp and that the judicial branch is completely controlled by the government. And so there is no judicial oversight of any kind, and Congress is being played as fools, at least from their perspective. Larry, you might want to challenge that. It is my conclusion that most of those who win seats in the Senate and Congress aren't the brightest individuals in the world, and that they're making decisions on things that they know very little about in most cases, that they're very poorly briefed on the subjects, and that their only inclination is to do and say whatever they think will make them more popular and more reelectable, and that is their entire motivation. So reading a bill that might be 12 feet tall when you look at all the documentation in it is not something they're going to do or even have a staff member do. They're simply going to make a decision based upon what makes them look best.
No, I wouldn't challenge that. I think you're right on target. I think basically what we have are a lot of people that look more like game show hosts to me.
Got a nice smile, got a nice way with people. They chit-chat
nice
quite nicely. Nice haircut, yeah. They really nice clothes. I mean, they need the credits at the end of each of their thing. Their apparel was provided by XYZ for a promotional fee. Right.
And at the end of the day, really, what you have are apparatchiks up there, bureaucrats that are directing it all.
Correct.
The political actors, you call them. That's where I got that term from you.
Okay.
That political actor is up there just spinning away and playing game show host. It's like the Wheel of Fortune out there. But, you know, the truth of the matter is more and more and more freedoms are being lost. You know, yesterday, Adam Kokesh was arrested. I don't know. You know, for doing a YouTube video, they actually came to his home in light armored vehicles replete with helicopters, three different law enforcement agencies, cuffed him, ransacked his home, him and his girlfriend, for 6 hours. Then they presented the warrant. And by the way, they came through the home with a battering ram. Now, yet
and his crime was doing what now?
He loaded a shotgun, saying it's time for a revolution on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
It's time for the next American revolution. Now, yet we can have the Black Panthers running around Sanford, Florida, talking about let's go burn Whitey's home down in very militant fashion.
Yeah. Let's think about that. Let's think about that for a moment. The man said it's time for a revolution. That's free speech. That is politically protected. He disseminated it via a YouTube, and he has a right to keep and bear arms. And the purpose of the Second Amendment on keeping and bearing arms was twofold. It said that a militia is necessary to a free society. Now, it's necessary for two ways. One is that if the average person is armed, then it becomes impossible for an invading army to occupy the country. And second, if the citizenry is armed, and if they are as well armed as the government, it becomes impossible for the government to oppress the people. So what he was expressing was the very foundation of the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That said, there are two things that I think that that incident then reveals. One is that if for anyone to revolt against their government, their religion, the societal institutions that are so irresponsible today, the wrong choice is bullets and bombs. The right choice is words wielded rationally, evidence and reason. And so, in my opinion, although what he did is constitutionally protected, that's the wrong approach.
Well, that may well be, but his message was not even about guns.
I understand.
His message was more like yours or mine. The point here.
But that's a bad way to. Although it's a constitutionally protected way to express it. The idea of loading and cocking a gun while saying it's time for a revolution, although constitutionally protected, the government had no right to go after him this way.
That is his point. And he knew they were going to come after him. Okay.
And
I think overkill is overkill.
Right. Oh, now that's the second point I was going to make. So while what he did was constitutionally protected, I want to disassociate it from at least my conclusion as to what the right way to proceed as it relates to encouraging people to stop being political and patriotic and to encourage people to walk away from their government and from their religion and to Yahweh instead. And that's to be observant, to examine the evidence, and to make a rational decision based on the evidence, and then based on what you learn, share it with others. That's a vastly more effective way.
Totally.
We agree.
That's
but
the answer.
Right. Now, the second point that you made, though, is the one I was going to make, is that we've reached a point in this country where the government's response is so oppressive, so overwhelming, so out of kilter with what's appropriate. We saw it with the Boston bombing, where they went after one boy without even a gun, and they took for days a city and made it a police state. And where vehicle after vehicle, thousands of vehicles and thousands of people, all armed to the teeth, had descended upon the suburb of Boston, making it into a police state for one guy who wasn't even armed.
Oh, and people went out and screamed USA. They call them assholes for nothing.
Just a stunning. But here again, here's a guy owned the shotgun and loaded the shotgun. He is and doing a video talking about the importance of a gun from a constitutional perspective in terms of addressing grievances with one's government and not allowing them to be oppressive. So the political statement he's making is constitutionally protected, and yet what the government did is use a battering ram, helicopters, SWAT teams, and everything else to invade this man's privacy with a court order, none of which they should have had, nor should have done. We are so over the top. You know, the mindset of those who are in control of this country is that they have lost their way. That if they had a moral compass, it's long gone. Whoever the judge was should not have given the order. The law enforcement agencies that engaged should never have engaged in this way. It's like, I read a story the other day that in Afghanistan, we spent $34 million. We're still constructing a office building for the U.S. military in Afghanistan. Even though we're leaving, we will never occupy the building. It cost us 30-some-odd million dollars, and we're continuing to build it even though we know we'll never occupy it.
But the decision will make a good amount of money.
And the decision is that we should go ahead and finish it, and then we'll bulldoze it. Then you read today that the U.S. government's then the U.S. government plan today is to go ahead and send four F-16s to the Egyptian government. That it's okay. We'll send another group of F-16s to the U.S. government and the Egyptian government.
Charge over there?
Yeah, it's that we aren't able to recognize what's appropriate. It goes back to the mindset for me of the Pacific campaign in World War II, which is the only place where you can even make an argument, although it falls apart, that we were protecting American liberty by use of our armed forces. And the decision was made to sacrifice the lives of 300,000 American boys and girls to avenge the death of 3,000. And when you realize just how grossly inappropriate that is, then you expand it into everything else that we have done as a nation since then, celebrating this grotesque lack of constraint. It's also manifest in our invasion of Iraq. The case was made that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, that he had weapons of mass destruction, and that he was building a nuclear bomb. Well, that he was also, by the way, housing and harboring al-Qaeda. It wasn't harboring al-Qaeda. He didn't have weapons of mass destruction. It was all a lie. And, yes, he was a bad guy. And then Americans said, well, it was good that we deposed him because he was a bad guy. But without the ability to make the connection to the realization that if you depose this bad guy, what if what you get is far worse? Are you willing to sacrifice the lives of 10,000 Americans, a million people overall, and $4 to $6 trillion of national treasure to go from a bad situation to a worse one?
Yeah,
to go from a bad situation to a worse one. And 99% of Americans can't make that connection. We've lost our ability to be rational. And
I think more and more Americans are making the connection because of shows like these, by the way. I don't think it's 99% anymore. I think it's almost becoming a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing people wake up. I'm a business owner.
Yeah.
And I talk to other business owners all day long. And they're all saying the same things you and I are saying. so.
Yeah. Well, you look right, go right back to Congress here. They're a rubber stamp on this because they haven't the capacity nor the desire to make an informed, rational decision. It's not even in their thought process.
I had just done an FB post on that. That's why people are so full of fear today. And they are in fear of the government today.
Yes, they ought to be.
Because they're just waking up to the fact that all the mumbo jumbo that they were taught in the public school system, which the same forces run, by the way, that there is a checks and balance system, which is exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't exist. There isn't one. And people are waking up to that fact. They're all going, what are these Republicans? They got no kahunas. No, it's a little more than that. You know, they're actually controlled by the same group of people that control the Democratic Party. It's that simple. It's an illusion.
Yeah.
If it's a choice, AT&T or Verizon, Burger King or McDonald's, the Republican Party or the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know.
When we come back, I'm going to have you locked in, Larry, and we're going to go to Glenn, who's in Philadelphia, who would like to speak on this particular subject. But the reason it's related to our discussion of Spygate and the fact that the United States has turned the average Americans into their enemy is that the oversight that is being touted on all of this is completely bogus. And we'll discuss that when we return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'll go to Glenn in a moment. I did bring up a bit on Adam Kokesh. However you pronounce his name, I really don't care if I mispronounce his name because I think he is a very dangerous individual. His most recent press release called for an American revolution whereby the American Revolutionary Army will march on each state capital to demand that governors of each of these 50 states immediately initiate the process of an orderly dissolution of the federal government through succession and reclamation of federally held property. Kokesh also gave the federal government a one-year deadline to comply with his demands before possibly taking violent action, writing, should one whole year from this July 4th pass, while the crimes of this government are allowed to continue, we may have passed the point at which nonviolent revolution becomes impossible. There is no good whatsoever that can come of people marching armed on state capitals. They have no basis to demand these things. And whether the government responds with excessive force and kills them, or they respond and kill others, this is a really, really bad idea. That does not justify the U.S. government responding to him by breaking into his home or sending SWAT teams and helicopters after him. But this is not a guy that you would want to be associated with. Glenn, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Larry. Yeah, it sounds like you had a chance to Google Kokesh on the break a bit there.
Yes.
You fleshed out the story a little bit there, I see.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he's a very bad man. He is a misguided individual. But you know, the point I was making when Larry brought it up was that even when I had just a little information on him, while I am completely opposed to what he is saying, the fact is the U.S. Constitution does expressly and explicitly give him the right to do and say what he is proposing. And so the U.S. government had no right to overreact to him with force of arms. That was the wrong move by the government. That doesn't mean that this guy's right. He's wrong, but what he's saying is protected by the U.S. Constitution, and so the government never should have gone after him in this way.
Well, the thing is that one thing you may not know, the YouTube video of him loading the shotgun was made in Freedom Plaza within the boundaries of Washington, D.C. He's the one who wanted to mount an armed march on Washington.
Right.
So this was his half-baked way of saying, well, look, I actually did it. And he made the YouTube video.
Right.
And based on that, they had video proof that this guy had, you know,
committed a crime. Right.
But Glenn,
let me interject here. While it is a crime in Washington and New York to do those things,
mm-hmm.
it should that the statute which criminalizes that is unconstitutional.
The that's what has to be proved. I said all along, that's what he should be going after.
That is correct.
Meetings or lawsuits. I say, you know, so let him sponsor, a lawsuit that's going, a class action lawsuit that will help overturn that.
Here's the problem with that, is that the federal government and the Supreme Court have no interest in ruling on infringements of the U.S. Constitution. They have no interest in taking a case, because any case on gun control, like, for example, not having a weapon in the mall in Washington, D.C., that law is unconstitutional, and they don't want to touch it because they would have no basis for upholding that law, and yet they want the law. And so they're in a mess. Let me, one other thing I want to say here, Glenn and Larry, which is, I'm going to give you my perspective on all of this, which is that I do not do the first half of this program where we expose and criticize religion and politics and military schemes and economic schemes, because I think that there is an opportunity to reclaim and save our country or any country on earth. There is not. So I'm not advocating anyone to join any cause to oppose their government or to try to save their government or save their religious institution. The entire purpose, that is correct, their iniquity is full, to use Yahweh's terms. The
right.
only purpose we do this is because individuals can change. An individual, when confronted with this information, can make the decision that I no longer want to be associated with these institutions. I reject who they are. I will no longer support them. I will no longer pay my homage to them. And then those individuals may turn, as we do, into the second hour of our program, to Yahweh. That's the purpose.